Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you're a Disney Plus subscriber and you're watching The Mandalorian, Jack and I have a podcast for you.
Every week, we'll discuss the latest episode of The Mandalorian and talk about other great content and maybe some not so great content on Disney Plus as well.
As two lifelong Star Wars fans, we have a ton of fun geeking out over all the little details of the show, and we want you to join us every Monday.
So search for Disney Plus Reviews. That's Disney P-L-U-S Reviews. Hey, Phil, how about that Baby Yoda? Baby Yoda says, what's a podcast?
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that requires more precise muscle control than football and basketball combined, it's SIFPA. Welcome to Sif Pop Weekly, streaming live most weekends or available to download later in your podcast feed. Unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks.
I made out with Black Panther.
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he has a private sort of greatness, but he keeps it to himself. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Ahoy!
Each week we'll chat about movies, television, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our guest this week, friend of the show, it's Jonathan Paula.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
It's great to see your beautiful face.
Thank you. Thank you for saying so. That's very kind, and I don't quite believe you, but I appreciate it.
What is there not to believe?
The beautiful part.
Well, you know.
My wife thinks so, and that's all that counts.
Well, and I make two, you know. There it's you like yeah, trial of the Chicago second. And then, Your Honor,
and let me be the second.
Let me be the second. We're excited because we're going to talk a little bit about a movie that just came out, as well as a classic. So we're kind of going old and new this week. We're going to talk Citizen Kane in anticipation of Mank. That is coming out here in a couple weeks. Actually, technically already in theaters this week. I don't know if you remember movie theaters, but apparently yeah, it's
good
showing.
Good luck finding a theater that's actually playing in your neighborhood.
Right, yeah. We have one open here, I think. But yeah, it's definitely not movie-going time for most people right now. But it is also going to be on Netflix here in a couple weeks. And then, speaking of Netflix, we have got Holidate. I'm going to call it a Christmas movie, but it's kind of just a holiday movie, you would guess from the title.
Every holiday.
Yeah, so
it's as much a 4th of July movie as it is a Christmas movie, and that's saying a lot or nothing at all. I don't.
Maybe it checks all those boxes so that it can be an every holiday. You know, so it's like, hey, have you seen? Are there any?
This is my favorite Labor Day movie, bar none.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
Best Arbor Day movie of all time. Yes.
So yeah, we're going to check both of those out. We've also got a best ever challenge that we're going to do. Before we get to any of that though, Jonathan, how are you doing, man? How has life been? Like, you know, I know there's obviously 2020 for everybody.
It's been an absolute mess.
Right. Yes. So, but yeah, kind of check us in on you know, life for Jonathan. Like, how you doing, man?
Surviving, I think, is the correct and honest answer. My wife and I welcomed a second baby girl at the very start of this year.
January 6th.
Congrats.
So she's already ready to walk and talk any week now. And that has kept us busy, especially since we're not allowed to leave our house, or really our zip code at the very worst.
Right.
And so I've just been watching a lot of movies. I've been catching up on some projects and some work and just trying to keep my two girls entertained without going stir crazy in the process. Mm-hmm. And it's been a year, and it's been such a blur that if my youngest hadn't progressed from like the little nugget she was to just this walking, little babbling, cute little baby she is, this entire year would just be indistinguishable one month to the next.
Right.
But I can look back at photos and be like, oh, okay, she was so much smaller in May versus today. But otherwise, my life has not changed at all from the beginning of the year to now. It's just been so similar.
Yeah.
For lack of a better word.
That's right.
We're all just kind of, we're just getting, going through the motions, and hopefully, you know, something exciting happens soon.
Yeah.
And we can all go outside.
We're all trying to figure out how to mark time, right? Like we're all trying to figure
out that's a good way of putting it.
What our routines are, what our rhythms are, what does life look like during this time? And we're all finding our way through it based on our very unique and complex circumstances, as you know, human beings have very different circumstances. So yeah, it's that I'd never thought about the idea of basically you had a child right like a month before the pandemic really hit the ground running.
I took paternity leave straight through Valentine's Day. And then I started working from home less than a month later, right before the NBA season was canceled. We all got sent home and we haven't been back since. So I actually only worked in my office for a total, I think, of like 14 or 16 working days. It was like 3.5 weeks total. And I don't miss that. I don't miss the commute. I don't miss going to an office for no reason when I can do my work here.
Right. Are they going to make you come back someday?
I hope not, because we're being more productive now. So that's up to the boss.
I think businesses are going to find some real advantage in having to had do it. You know, to had to have do it this way for a while. They're going to figure out, oh, we could probably do some things more efficiently this way. So yeah, I wonder if some people will ever really go back. At least go back in the same way that they went to an office before. But I'm the guy that's worked from home for several years, so I don't,
I'm very used to it. I mean, I did YouTube professionally for a decade, mm-hmm. so I'm very used to working in my office here at home, and so I have the facilities to make it work even with two young kids at home. But for those who are working out of their bedroom or their laundry room, trying to homeschool all my sympathy with the parents of young kids. I have much younger kids, and they're not in school yet, but those people that are trying to navigate homeschooling and working from home.
Yeah.
And they don't even have a dedicated office. Like, good luck. I don't know how you've done it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Well, it's definitely good to have you on again, man.
Thank you.
It's we're going to have a good time talking movies like we do on Sif Pop. So I think we can just get right into it. Let's kick it off by taking a look at Holidate.
We are right on target for Q3, and I'm sorry, can I call you back? Mom, I'm working.
That's what you wear to work? I want you to meet someone. This is a doctor, and he's single. She's much prettier with makeup.
I'm wearing makeup.
I am done casually dating on the holidays. There's way too much pressure. It's ridiculous.
Try being the only single person left in your family.
Rodney said you didn't call him.
You didn't call Rodney?
Why didn't you call Rodney?
Why didn't you call Rodney?
Because I already have a boyfriend.
Fed up with being single on the holidays, two strangers agree to be each other's platonic plus ones all year long, only to catch real feelings along the way. Spoiler alert. As if you didn't know, in a romantic comedy. We've got Emma Roberts here. We've got Luke Bracey together playing the main roles. And this is kind of our... I'm going to say first holiday movie heading into the holiday season, at least the first new one I can think of. And so it will impact our best ever challenge later. We'll be talking about our favorite recent holiday movies. But what did you guys think? We like to kick it off with a like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay. Andrew, why don't you go first?
It was okay.
Just okay.
Just okay.
Jonathan, what about you?
I'm right there. It was just okay.
I think I'm going to be the one who liked this the most. I was going to say high side of just okay, and maybe even stretching into the low side of liked it. This movie has...
Let's come back to that opinion in a year, though, and see if you can even remember the movie.
Right. No, and I think you're absolutely right. And we are so aware this year of how this year has impacted... enjoyment of movies. Every time I watch a movie, I'm like, ah, it's a movie. It's telling a story. I love it. And so, yeah, it is a little different for sure. And I think you're absolutely right about that.
To badly paraphrase one of my favorite quotes from the American president, they don't drink the sand because they're thirsty. They drink the sand because they don't know the difference. And Holiday is one of those movies where like, yeah, it seems good because we haven't had anything better. This is one of the best movies of 2020. In the sense that we haven't got any tent poles, any blockbusters, any big studio releases. We just have sort of middle of the road, middle budget Netflix direct to streaming movies like this. And some of them have been pretty good.
Yeah.
None of them have been awful, but they all kind of exist in this, like, straight down the middle. They're not offensive. They're not excellent. They're not terrible. It's just, okay.
Yeah, I know I had moments during this movie where I was like, oh, that's kind of funny. That's kind of fun. You know, like, it does some things that are interesting enough for me that it just kind of, it bent the needle just a little bit towards the I liked it side for me. And I was not expecting that, especially because, really honestly, for the first 20 to 30 minutes of this movie, I was kind of out. Like, I was kind of bored. I wasn't buying into them yet. And then something happened right about that point, you know, somewhere in the 30 to 45 minute range, where I just kind of really liked them together. And all of a sudden I was enjoying hanging out with them together. I kind of liked their banter. So then it kind of started, you know, pushing me the other direction. How did you feel about not just their performances, but their chemistry in this couple as someone we're interested in seeing how all this is going to work out? Because honestly, if you're doing a rom-com, that's a really key factor.
Talking to me or Andrew?
Either one.
I'll go.
Okay.
I'll say that, yeah, it works, but it doesn't work any more than any above average rom-com. It's not like I was like, oh, now they're going to stand out. It's kind of like what Josh said, where it's like, yeah, if you can remember this movie after a year, I'll be impressed. You know, it's a paint by numbers. They're going to, you know, start off, you know, just as friends, and they're going to develop feelings for another. Then they're going to have the fight. And then at the end of the movie, they got to give the big speech to get back together. I'm not spoiling it because that's literally every single rom-com
right.
History of rom-coms. So if you're like, oh, great, he gave away the movie. If you went into this thinking that there was going to be something special, that's on you.
That's right. How dare you? How dare you think it could be unique and different? Were you buying in, Jonathan?
I think I agree with you, Aaron, that certainly the strongest aspect of this film are the performances from the two leads and the chemistry. I felt that actually legitimately worked. Emma was adorable. Luke Bracey, I thought, was really charming. I thought he nailed all the bits and beats that he needed to. But the overall story was just very paint by numbers. Like, okay, it's there's not a will they, won't they. It's when will they. And obviously before the next Christmas holiday, it's a Christmas to Christmas narrative. It starts on Christmas Eve and runs through the next Christmas. And as soon as they set up that conceit that this was, I'm only going to date you on holidays, and they have this short montage where they immediately show New Year's, then Valentine's, then St. Patrick's Day, it's like, okay, that means by Labor Day we'll have the falling apart moment, right, where they sort of, the black moment of the script, and then hopefully by the next Thanksgiving or Christmas they'll come back. You could map, I already had the screenplay in my head while we were 20 minutes into it, and I mean, predictability isn't like a bad thing. Certainly with this genre, you expect all of these things to happen exactly as you said, Andrew, like the big speech, all these moments. But they did it in a way that was fun and occasionally funny. And I thought the chemistry worked. So like, I would recommend it, but I wouldn't expect anyone to come back to this or to put it on their shelf as a favorite.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Gosh, no.
Yeah. You guys are talking me down. I'm definitely not headed into the liked it category. I'm going to keep it strictly in the high side of it was just okay.
I will say, just as another pro, I think I laughed more in this than I have in any like holiday rom-com I've ever seen. Like, I know that's a very niche category, but as far as those go, I think this was pretty funny.
Yeah,
I remember laughing several times. I think that's like what you said, Aaron, because of the chemistry. I think Emma Roberts in this is really funny. And my biggest problem, though, and then what keeps it from going above it is there's too many characters in this movie.
They had definitely had a lot of supporting players.
Yeah.
And there's a side plot with Christian Chenoweth, the Broadway star, who falls in love with like a younger character. And that just felt really forced and unbelievable, and just it felt entirely like we need to make fun of this funny concept. What if this older lady liked a younger man? Hilarious. I felt like that dragged down the rest of the movie, not to a detrimental degree, but I wasn't interested. It was just a joke they kept revisiting for no good reason.
I think the purpose of it is they're trying to say like, oh, this is going to be Emma Roberts. If she doesn't change who she is, she's going to end up to be Kristen Chenoweth, you know, just dating somebody. But it doesn't add anything to the movie. It doesn't, like, the revelation that we're supposed to have is one that we knew we were going to have before we even started the movie. So
Yeah, I mean, the movie pretty much lays that out in the opening minutes, that like you can't just waffle through your 30s without trying to settle down. I mean, you certainly can, but to this particular character, they made it very obvious that's not her goal in life. She wants to find a serious romantic relationship. So every other beat after that, where she continually tries to just tell people like, no, I'm not serious. I don't care. I can just have one night stands. It's like, we know you're lying. There's no, there's no dramatic irony here when everyone knows you're lying. And so, yeah, I think the conflict here is manufactured and very sort of superficial. But it goes through the motions well enough that I didn't get too bored. I don't think I looked at my phone all that much. And I enjoyed it.
There was one B plot that I actually kind of enjoyed, but it's a very small one. But I really like Jessica Capshaw, I think, and Alex Moffitt.
Is it the sister?
Yeah, the married sister with the, you know, did you say four kids? Is that what they said? I mean,
I think four.
I can't imagine somebody having four children. Wow, why would you ever do that to yourself? I just can't imagine.
I mean, that's just masochistic at that point.
There was something interesting and funny about her experience of that married a long time, having kids relationship. There was something there that was of the B plots, at least a little bit funny and interesting to me. But I totally agree. I thought the Kristen Chenoweth side plot was a miss, you know, for the most part. And even the brother, right? Jake Hanley. I thought that was a little bit of a miss as well. So, but overall, it just keeps you interested enough and laughing enough to kind of go along with it. I did wonder how you guys felt about the very purposeful vulgarity of the movie. You know, the movie is very much saying
the very first word of the film is an F-bomb.
Right.
And my first thought was going into this, like, this is going to be a cutesy romantic holiday film on Netflix. This is not a Hallmark movie. This is absolutely.
No.
Very, I don't know if it's raunchy, but it's very adult. Definitely some crude humor. And there's some blood, for lack of a more spoilery
right.
sort of description.
Sure, yeah.
And I kind of enjoyed that because I was expecting something cutesy, and it was a little bit more mature than that, which I appreciated.
Yeah, what did you think, Andrew? How did that impact you as far as the you know? Because it's definitely making a point to say, like, you can tell it's a very purposeful decision on their part to be like, oh no, we're going to be
not your mama's holiday,
right?
Movie.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I honestly had no idea that's the kind of movie I was watching, and honestly, that might be one of the reasons why it's up there for me and like a closer to a like it, because I'm like, oh, it's not, you know, I'm just not going to be asleep during this. There's actually going to be moments where if I pay attention, I'm going to laugh, you know. But it's still, there's too much paint by numbers for me to care enough about this movie because I've seen 1,000 of these movies before.
I think I felt that even the vulgarity was a little paint by numbers. Like I felt like even the way this movie decided to, you know, push the boundaries or whatever, it didn't feel especially fresh to me. It just felt like, hey, we're going to be this kind of movie, so we can do this. It was kind of shades of. When X-Men went rated, you know, R there for a second, or, you know, wanted to push the
I was
going to
say, this reminded me a bit of Bad Moms.
Yeah, I think that's a fair example as well.
Which was like a pretty okay movie that sort of traded on the laurels of like, what if stay-at-home moms were swearing? Like that's the pitch line.
Can you imagine?
Can you imagine, right? And that was sort of like a 30-something woman who's dating also can swear and like say vulgar things and just, okay.
Yeah.
Clutch my pearls.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it was the fact that it was a holiday rom-com is what caught me off guard to that style of humor. Then I'm like, oh, okay. So, but yeah, if you just compare it to every other movie, it's nothing special.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's kind of where we're all landing. I think if you've already got Netflix, it's there for you. So as far as like a recommendation, you know, if you want to laugh every once in a while and, you know, see these characters who you might care about a little bit.
I think it's a good date movie. My wife enjoyed it about the same as I did. I think it's not going to offend anybody. And it's a good just throw it on before you go to sleep kind of a film.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Andrew, would you agree?
Sure.
All right.
I've already forgotten about it.
What were we talking about again? Yeah. I forget.
Just a ringing, half-hearted endorsement. Okay,
right.
Whatever. Yeah,
that's right. I guess. So that's Holiday on Netflix. Let's move on to our next review. Let's talk a little bit about a little movie called Citizen Kane.
Never heard of it.
It isn't enough to tell us what a man did. You've got to tell us who he was.
Been very rich, I might have been a really great man.
I'm Charles Foster Kane.
When a reporter is assigned to decipher newspaper magnate's Charles Foster Kane's dying words, his investigation gradually reveals the fascinating portrait of a complex man who rose from obscurity to staggering heights. Famously, this is AFI's number one movie of all time when they first did their top 100 list. It is also famously many people's number one movie of all time. It is kind of a hindsight growth that this movie has had. Certainly, it was, I think, respected by some when it came out, but as far as the...
It was not a critical darling.
No, it was not.
Very ahead of its time.
Mostly Casablanca that year.
It's in hindsight that you see how much of the innovation of this movie really changed cinema, and that's why a lot of people will qualify it as a number one or certainly up there in their movies. Before we get to the liked it, loved it, disliked it, hated it, or it was just okay, let me ask when the first time you saw Citizen Kane was. Jonathan, why don't you go first? When was the first time you remember watching this movie?
I first saw Citizen Kane in high school as part of my media literacy class. The same guy who taught me how to use a video camera and edit video got me into video production. I think my junior year of high school, he started the first year. He's been doing it now for almost 20. Media literacy, where we looked at old classics and took a critical look at news and the way it portrays things in the media. The kind of thing that in 2003, 2004 was sort of very front of the line. These days, I think everybody deserves that kind of education. And I remember sort of watching it as homework more than anything. I was like, okay, this is an old movie. I know it's supposed to be important. And I know I'm supposed to respect it and admire it for this, this, and this. But I genuinely kind of dug it. And revisiting it as an adult 15 years later, I think it definitely holds up. And I guess we'll get to our proper opinion in a minute.
Yeah, Andrew.
Yeah, for me, a while, I was probably 16 or so when I first saw it.
Andrew, when's the first time you remember seeing Citizen Kane?
Same. I was in high school. It was part of my film history class.
There you go.
And I just remember watching it going, okay, yeah, this is a pretty good movie. I think even then, even though I was in high school, I didn't understand the everything that this movie was doing and how I should have appreciated it, even at the time. Now, granted, upon multiple viewings of this movie, I have, you know, taken or seen things that are like, oh, okay, it's interesting they did that. Even this most recent time, maybe I'm still picking up on things. Maybe this is just one of those movies, no matter how many times you see it, you're gonna find something new to appreciate about it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's
so you were in high school
back then. Yeah, I was in high school. I think back then I was like, yeah, it's a fun movie, but come on, let's go watch Black Hawk Down. That's coming out soon.
Right.
Or Ocean's 11, you know?
Yeah.
Or Zoolander.
What about you?
I was much older, and it's one of the reasons I asked the question. I don't remember watching this movie until after AFI released their list. And it was then that I was like, you know what? If I'm going to call myself a movie lover of any kind, I really have to check this one off. Like, you know,
so they've released the list twice, in 97 and then 2007. And I believe it was number one on both iterations.
Correct.
Did you watch it then in 97 or 2007?
No, it would have been after the 97 list, okay. Like a few years. It wasn't okay. Like I saw that list and was, you know, immediately running to check them off. Sure. But, you know, probably in the early 2000s. So, you know, I would have been in my later 20s, probably, when I saw this for the first time. And it was really eye-opening, and I was really glad, you know, that I saw it. So, but coming to it later, I've had mixed experiences with coming to classic movies later. we talked a little bit about that in the Members Only pre-show, you know, talking about like Lawrence of Arabia or, you know, some of those classic movies. And even this last year when we've done some of our List of Shame episodes, Andrew, you know, I come to Full Metal Jacket, you know, so many years later, and I just go, I don't quite see the same thing everybody sees in hindsight with this movie. So, you know, I've had mixed experience with that, but not with this movie. Citizen Kane, you know, blew me away right from the beginning. So, yeah, I think it's safe to say I am still firmly in the loved it category. What about you, John?
High side of loved it. This is an absolute masterpiece, front to bottom, start to finish. There are very few flaws I find anywhere in this picture. Personally, it's not probably in my top 10 because I prefer movies that are maybe more rewatchable, more action, adventure kind of spectacle. But just from like an objective film criticism standpoint, like there is absolutely nothing wrong with Citizen Kane. I love it.
Yeah. Where do you land, Andrew?
I'm lower than you guys, but not by much. I'm in the really liked it. It's not my top 100 movies of all time. I know it's one of those movies where like I'm seeing it and I know what I'm watching is masterful, but there's something in a movie that would like make your top 100 movies of all time that just makes you go, I am immersed in this. I don't feel immersed whenever I'm watching Citizen Kane personally. I appreciate and I understand like, oh, Orson Welles is killing it. He's given one of the best performances ever. Oh, this is, if there's a movie ever I would consider a perfect dive into the evolution of a character, this would probably be the one I would go, okay, yeah, watching a character go from here to there, it's Citizen Kane. It's a timeless movie, but it's just not a movie that makes me go, I need to watch Citizen Kane again.
Yeah. It's interesting, too, because sometimes when movies change cinema, you can't help but watch them in hindsight and go, yeah, I've seen that in so many other movies. Well, yeah, because he'd invented it.
It did.
You know, like
I think one of the smallest little bits of trivia, but one that kind of blows me away, that Citizen Kane was among the first, if not the first, major Hollywood film to show ceilings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like just showing the ceiling of a set was like, of course people do that. Yeah, now they do. In 1941, when 26-year-old Orson Welles decided to lower the camera into the floorboards and shoot up towards the ceiling, people had never seen that. You look at any movie from the 30s and 40s, anything with Cary Grant or Clark Gable, these big epics or even lower budget films, they were on sound stages and sets and they just had 20-foot ceilings with lights up there.
Mm-hmm.
Orson was like, let's bring that down to 7 feet where they usually are in these old New York office buildings. And let's put like mesh sheets up there and put the lights above that. And you won't be able to tell the difference. And you get some really inventive angles. And it's the kind of thing that we totally take for granted now. Yeah, of course, they're in a closed set with real ceilings and walls. But that was something that was like literally unheard of in the early 40s.
It is one of those movies you watch. And I'm not only so impressed by some of those choices, those visual choices, like the ceilings or the framing or the way he plays with distance. There's a scene where Kane walks to a window in the background, and when they're in the foreground talking, it just looks like a normal window that's maybe about 5 feet away from them. But as he starts to walk to the background, you realize it's like 50 feet away and it's a giant window. You know, like just some of those things I just watch and I'm just so impressed by. And then not only that, but I continue to be impressed by how intentional they all are to the story. You know, how much they're supposed to make us feel. Even looking up at the ceiling is supposed to make us feel like this man is towering over us. You know, like this, you know, that there's a presence to this human being. And just that they're those kind of intentional visual storytelling choices, they just weren't as big of a part of movie making then. There was some of that. Certainly Hitchcock was doing some of that, and many others were as well. But it just, you know, he found a way to just really explore that in just some really interesting ways. So I continue to be struck every time I see it.
In terms from cinematography, every frame of this is gorgeous. He plays with shadows and lighting really well. The primary sort of narrative vehicle that we witness the screenplay through this newspaper reporter, Mr. Thompson, who is the one that tries to investigate Kane's last words, we never see his face. The entire movie, he is meant to be, you know, our proxy as the audience.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't actually ever see him. The entire film, he's in shadow. His back is to the camera. And everyone else sort of comes in and out of shadow and lighting. And they play with distance and blocking really well, where you'll get frames. Someone's in the extreme close-up. There's two people in, like, the middle ground. And then someone else, equally as important, completely in focus, but 100 feet away. And Orson plays with, like, the deep focus shots so well on this. And you don't see that kind of, like, long frame photography that much anymore. But I really love the way that looks
mm-hmm.
and the way he frames so many shots around, like, these crowded, you know, medium close-ups and stuff. Mm-hmm. I loved it.
Yeah, I remember the first time I watched it, the opening is the you know, the partial zoom into, you know, the house. And I just became very aware of how the lit window was staying at the exact same place in the yes. frame every time it made a movement. And I was just like, oh, I see what we're doing here. We're playing with genius. I was like, okay, I see what's going on here.
I think the word you used a minute ago was intentional. Like every yeah. single edit, every cut, every framing, every decision of where to place the shadows and the light, all that's intentional for a purpose. And if you can figure it all out, you're probably as smart as, you know, Orson Welles. But I think just being able to appreciate that there's clearly something better and more intelligent at work here than the average film is the kind of thing that it's like, okay, this is impressive. I don't entirely understand all the choices, but I'm moved by them in a way that I can't quite articulate.
So we can transition from kind of the, you know, the technical movie dirt nerddom kind of, you know, look into this movie to the actual story, because that is valuable to explore as well, because a movie can be both be innovative and also not tell a great story, or it can do both. And I do think this movie does both. But yeah, what are some of your observations just on the actual, you know, the plot, the acting, you know, how does this story hit you watching it again this latest time? Andrew, why don't you start?
This is why this movie is not in the loved it category for me, is because I don't think that the story in this is one that is worth revisiting. It's a story, I don't want to say it's a storyless movie, but it's an, like I said earlier on, it's an evolution of character. So we're watching a man transcend, you know, from rags to riches to almost a deity in his, you know, in his profession. And how that, with that great power, can lead to madness and stuff like that. So watching his mental faculties, you know, crumble under the weight of his brilliance, even, you could say. So whenever you say, what do I think of the story? I'm like, the story is, watch this man live his life. And there's not much to expect, or you're just along for the ride, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Jonathan, any thoughts?
Of the, I think, 9 Oscars it was nominated for, original screenplay was the only one that it actually took home. And I think rightly so. There's a reason why we're getting this Mankiewicz movie in a couple weeks on Netflix. The screenplay, I think, is brilliant. And it's so inventive in its nonlinear approach with these, like, overlapping, intercutting flashbacks that are told completely out of sequence. We start at his death, and then we jump to, like, the 1920s, then back to the 1860s, then up to the 1890s, and then to the 1930s again. Like, the way that they rearrange everything, you definitely have to pay attention to keep track of, like, who is the narrator for this section of the film?
Right.
When does this take place? Where in Kane's evolution is this? And the screenplay addresses a lot of those potential hurdles by beginning the film with, like, a 10-minute trailer of Kane's entire life, where they just outline his entire life and all of the scandals, all of the pitfalls and promise of his entire career in the opening 10 minutes. So that later in the film, it's like, oh, okay, so we're at the point of his life where he got divorced and he had a scandal. Okay, I remember that from the beginning. They've already outlined what you need to know as the framework. So when you jump around later, you have sort of road marks. And mm-hmm. I can't think of another movie that tells you the entire story in the first 10 minutes and then spreads it out and explains it again. And everything this does from a narrative perspective, using the different narrators and the different flashbacks, is, again, one of those things that, like, I think I've seen other movies like that today, but 80 years ago, that was, like,
yeah,
completely new.
Yeah. Yeah, the way it plays with narrative. I think I'm somewhere in between kind of the two thoughts that you guys gave. I think the story, it's not that it's its weak point. I just, if this was a movie that did not innovate in the way that it does and did not, and again, this is a hypothetical that does not exist because this is a movie that innovates the way that it does and tells us the story the way that it does. But in the hands of a different director, in the hands of somebody not as willing to be to play around with it, do those kind of things, I think this is just it's an okay movie that tells the, you know, the story of how power corrupts and how, you know, power you know, can be a bad thing, and that's not a terrible tale to tell. It's an important, you know, tale to tell through time.
I think that is an interesting thought experiment, though, that what if the narrative of Citizen Kane is sequenced completely linearly?
Yeah.
It started, you know, as his boyhood house sledding out back and his parents give him up to the bank or whatever. And then we just watch his life progress and the folly of his hubris brings him down at the end. And then his dying last words are Rosebud. And the movie sort of ends right after that. Like, that would be an interesting story, but I think without the narrative weaving and bobbing and without some of the technical accomplishments. Mm-hmm. I think you're right, Aaron. I think it would be like, okay, yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Like other movies from the 40s I've seen and appreciated, but wouldn't necessarily, you know, praise or recommend like this one.
How do we feel about Wells' performance as Kane?
Stellar.
Oh, he's great. Yeah. He's so good.
Yeah.
It's what carries the movie for me.
He's 26 years old in this.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine accomplishing anything to this degree when I was that age, let alone playing himself at every age from 26 to what, 70 or whatever, he pulls it off. Like, you watch this and you think you're watching a man with like worlds of experience, and like, nah, he's fresh out of college. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's making this up.
Yeah, it's I was trying to think of an example of somebody who tried to do something this expansive at that age, and I was trying to remember, I'm looking it up right now, but trying to remember how old DiCaprio was when he did Aviator. I think that was like 2004.
He was like 30 or 31 when he did Aviator.
He was 30 when he did Aviator. So that's kind of close, you know, to, because that is a similar undertaking, right? To play that breadth of a life in, you know, that kind of way. But I think Wells pulls it off better.
The excellent makeup, I think definitely sells a lot of this.
Yeah,
because and never once in the film do you think he looks like old Biff from Back to the Future. He never looks like they just caked on some stuff.
Right, yeah.
And maybe a lot of that is the lighting and the black and white photography hides a lot of those blemishes. But Wells legitimately looks like he's sort of a portly middle-aged 50s balding man for most of this film, and you buy it.
Yeah.
Even though, no, he's like a fresh-faced 20-something kid
mm-hmm.
with a full head of hair. And they do so well at making him look the part that I think his performance sort of seals the deal on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we still do have, you know, Wunderkind, you know, directors that you know, kind of show the old guys how it's done.
Actually, that leads me into to a question I have for you guys.
Yeah, sure,
actually,
sure.
Two questions. The first question is, will we ever get another Citizen Kane? Like a movie that we would define as the greatest of all time, and has that movie already been directed?
Yeah, I mean,
think the answer is yeah.
Now, are you framing that from like an auteur perspective, like a one man, one vision? He just goes for the fences and he knocks it out of the park.
Yeah,
or something like an Avengers Endgame that sort of redefines the entire zeitgeist of cinema from a sort of blockbuster apparatus.
No, I think following the same, like, I guess you could say, blueprint of what Citizen Kane did, like a one man, like, directs a tour de force movie that after many years, people will go back and go, wait, that's the greatest movie of all time.
That's a really tricky question.
Yeah,
so
it's really hard.
Do you think that movie has already been made besides Citizen Kane, or do you think we ever will see a movie that does that again?
So here's the difficult thing. Things don't happen in a vacuum. There are certainly biases in things that impact all of us that will continue to build upon themselves. And, you know, the fact that Hollywood was so young when this was made is a lot of what this has going for it. You know, a movie that's made in 1990 or 2010, it's just never going to be seen the same way, because movies have been around 100 years and had already kind of piled up the history and the understanding of things. Now, having said that, one of the categories that I love to use for certain kinds of movies, I call them seismic movies, movies that change the landscape. And, you know, different movies have a different, you know, rating on the Richter scale for how they do that. And Citizen Kane definitely registered very high on the seismic Richter scale. It changed movies. But so did movies like Toy Story was a seismic movie. You know, I mean, you think of the billions and billions of dollars made on digital animation now. And for Pixar to be the first to go, hey, we're going to make a whole movie with ones and zeros telling the story. It's like, you know, that's a seismic movie, right? Will it ever be considered as great as Citizen Kane? No, because it came, you know, 90 years into movies being a thing. It's, but maybe 500 years from now, that'll seem fairly young. You know, like, I don't know. It's just, it's so hard to tell. Matrix is another one, a very seismic movie, definitely changed, you know, a lot. Yeah, I think there are movies that continue to have impact on how movies are made, how we tell stories, all that kind of stuff. You know, Pulp Fiction is probably one of those movies too. But it's just so hard to think of those movies being elevated to this level, because it's just the recency is too difficult.
I think Jaws and Star Wars are definitely in that conversation.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And recently, I feel like Jordan Peele's Get Out might not be in the greatest of all time, but from like an auteur perspective of like debut directorial outing that kind of has this like bold vision that no one's ever seen before, that shook up a lot of things. That's a really interesting question, and I don't know that we'll ever have that much of a sort of seismic wave again,
right?
Because of how far out into the ocean we already are. You need a big splash at this point to really do anything. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And maybe that we don't have any of those, you know, bullets left in the chamber, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean,
those are some interesting answers, but the correct answer was Damien Chazelle and Whiplash.
Listen,
honestly,
I
100% believe that Whiplash will go down as the next Citizen Kane, because Damien Chazelle was 27, 28.
Yeah, when he made it. I think he was 29 when it came out. But yeah, he was 27, I think, when he made it. I thought of it. I thought about mentioning Chazelle and Whiplash. It's just, again, it's so hard to have that perspective and really think 100 years from now, are people going to look back at Whiplash? Because it's not like Orson Welles had a crazy career after this either. Like, you know, it's not like he had hit after hit.
I think
hit
his next
hit.
Film was The Magnificent Ambersons, and I don't know many people that have seen that outside of, you know, film nerds like myself.
Right.
Yeah.
He didn't go on to become this, you know, cult icon with huge, you know, box office returns after this.
Yeah.
He wasn't a one-hit wonder.
Yeah, Touch of Evil, and that's probably the other big one that people know him from.
Sure.
But
I wanted to read a couple comments, and I'm not going to put them live on the screen because I think they would cover up Jonathan, and we want to make sure, you know, Jonathan, we can see your face. But somebody said, I've actually never seen Citizen Kane. I've just never had the desire. Feels more like homework than actual entertaining movie watching to me. Boy, I get that feeling. I know that feeling of I'm going to have to do homework and watch this thing.
A good framing of that then is, how do we recommend a movie like this without it seeming like homework? Because I want everyone to appreciate it and love it as much as I do, or at least say they've seen it so they could form their own opinion, even if they don't like it. But how do you recommend a movie that is so critically lauded without making it feel like it's obligatory?
Yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, if being entertained is kind of what you're fearing will be missing, you know, I don't know how to negate that feeling, because this is a movie that was made a long time ago, and we are, the way we have developed entertainment is so much more active now than it used to be. So I don't know that I can tell you will be quote unquote entertained. I am, but that's partially because I'm noticing the visual gymnastics that are going on. You know, I had moments in this movie, and this kind of takes you out of a movie sometimes when you have, you know, my brain, but, you know, I'm like, how did the camera get there and is looking at the things that it's looking at now? Like, what kind of things were happening in the background to move that table and then quickly move it back in, you know, into frame. And just like,
there's some great breakaway furniture in this film. A lot of model work.
Yeah.
Paintings.
I have to shout out, it's one of the coolest scenes in the movie. And it's the scene, I think it's the very first scene in the movie where the camera's panning in and it goes through the window into the house. Yeah. That's never been done before. And maybe that.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That is how you could recommend this movie to people. You could be like, okay, you know this movie that you love, you know this movie that you love, this movie, and just list off all the movies you know a person would love. Tell them, those movies wouldn't exist if it weren't for the breakthroughs of Citizen Kane. And then maybe vicariously they can bring those that excitement that they have and love for those other movies. And while they're watching it, they're like, oh, I see where this came in, or I see where this such and such movie got this from, you know? And it could just... So their love could be, I guess you could say, I can see the evolution of this and understood, like, oh, I understand why this movie did all these things. And because of that understanding, it brings a level of love and appreciation for it. But if you go into this movie, just wanting to go, yeah, I need to see Citizen Kane just so I can say I've seen Citizen Kane. Yeah, then it's homework.
I would say a really helpful prerequisite for this is, if you're in the mood and you have the time, spend a week watching movies from the 1930s and early 1940s first, then put Citizen Kane on, and you'll be blown away by how more modern this feels. Citizen Kane looks and feels like a movie that came out a couple years ago. There is a scene, without spoiling too much, but again, it is an 80-year-old film, where Citizen Kane runs for election and loses, and his own owned newspaper runs a headline that says I forget what the top line says, but the bottom part of the headline says fraud at polls because he didn't win the election and his own paper won't call the election. That seems remarkably prescient. That seems exactly like we're living through right now in America. And this was 80 years ago. He had the foresight to come up with some of these ideas about power and how that corrupts. And you compare that to some of the other narratives of that era, they're not nearly as relevant today as the movies like Citizen Kane or some of its other contemporaries. So I think if you go through a bunch of film in chronological order, Citizen Kane's going to seem like a seismic leap forward in every way possible, at least from a technical.
I love that you brought that scene up. I was hoping we'd talk about it because it certainly does stand out with everything that's going on now. And one of the things I love about that scene is it comes after the election, but we still don't know the results of the election. And that scene is to tell us the results of his election. And the first thing we see is the front page that says Kane wins, you know, voters are heard or something like that, you know. And then they set that one down and go, well, I guess we're going with this one. And it says Kane wins, fraud at the polls. And it's just it's just this perfect encapsulation of the power of the press and all that stuff. It's really great movie making. I think what I would say is understand the type of entertainment you're getting yourself into, and it's not the same as type of entertainment as Infinity War. It is very different, but you can still be entertained. Somebody else in the comments said, I've yet to see this mostly because the praise is so high, I'll overestimate it and be disappointed by it. I get that feeling too. I totally understand that, you know. I call that prestige pressure. You know, the idea of I have to love this thing because it has so much prestige to it.
And, Aaron,
I thought you meant that the movie had to be as good as Christopher Nolan's The Prestige for you to love it.
Yeah, that's what I meant by it. Yeah.
It has to be as good as that. Aaron, can I just say, I love that you have cute little names for every little nuanced reaction or experience. I'm going to borrow some of these. They're great. And I think for me that prestige pressure definitely exists. When I first watched Lawrence of Arabia just earlier this summer, it was one of the highest rated movies on my list of shame. And I finally decided I'm going to block out 4 hours and I'm going to finally watch this. I had to get my mind into a mindset of, okay, I want to appreciate this. I want to really understand why it is so critically acclaimed.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to sort of allow myself – to accept it for what it is without that pressure. And if you can kind of trick your brain into just allowing yourself to like it, regardless of whether or not it is good,
right?
Hopefully you can kind of go into a Citizen Kane experience without the pressure and just be wowed by, you know, storytelling and technical accomplishments or just great makeup and acting. You know, there's a lot of things in here I think even objectively you can't fault.
Yeah, just let the movie do what it's going to do. And, you know, worst case scenario, you lost a couple hours of your life. That's, you know, percentage-wise, hopefully that's not too much. I don't even think we need to go through the recommend part. Obviously, we all recommend this movie. But yeah, find your own way into it if you've never seen it. Find a way that you can be at peace with just watching it and letting it be whatever it is. And I think you'll come out the other side, at least happy you marked it off the list, if nothing else. So there you go. That is our very timely review of Citizen Kane.
Yeah, once you see it, you can log in and tell us all why we're wrong.
That's right.
79 years late, guys, but we did it.
We finally got around to Citizen Kane. We made it happen.
This is what the social IR has been waiting for, is us three to sit down and tell them that, Citizen Kane is good.
I think there's actually a footnote in the AFI list, like, we're still awaiting the CIFPOP review, but we're pretty sure this is number one. I think I remember seeing that little asterisk.
If we had if we had put all of our weight behind Casablanca, would that have...
I think so. Hollywood waits on pins and needles for the CIFPOP thoughts.
So I where do you think on the AFI list Holiday is going to land?
Holiday? Oh, that's a great question.
Low 90s, at least.
Yeah.
Low 90s. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Before we head into our best ever challenge, another thank you to our CIFPOP members. We could not do this without you. It is appreciated and humbling that you would throw a couple bucks our way every month. Really does mean the world to us and helps us keep doing this, helps us with the ability to, get equipment to stream live. Now the ability to pay for the monthly, streaming fees, all that kind of stuff, comes from our amazing CIFPOP members. If you enjoy the show and you kind of want to look at what some of the perks are, just go to, the Patreon, patreon.com/CIFPOP, S-I-F-T-P-O-P. Patreon.com/CIFPOP, and thank you again for checking that out. All right, let's head on to our best ever challenge this week. We are going to do best ever Christmas movies of the 2010s. Have there been good recent Christmas movies? And Jonathan very firmly saying no. This will be an interesting top five. And we will go from number five to number one and kind of go a long way. Now, Jonathan, you've been with us before on this. We do trump choices when we have them higher. So if you do hear something you want to talk about later because you have it higher, just let us know.
Sure.
And we'll go about it that way. I think this is one of those best ever challenges that does maybe not require but could benefit from a little kind of pre-talk about it. Because, Jonathan, you're not wrong. I actually put this category out there before I had done the research, which is a very, you know, dangerous thing to do. Usually I'll do a little bit of research, to make sure that the category is, you know, fat enough to pull some stuff from. And I was actually really surprised how thin it was.
Yes.
And
very thin.
And why do you guys think that is? Before we get into this, why has nobody made it, you know, I mean, I shouldn't say nobody, but why have so few great holiday movies been made in the last 10 years? What do you think, Andrew?
Here's a little preface for you. I don't even have five. I'm not even joking. I have not seen, but from the prerequisites that are given to us, a Christmas movie within the last 10 years, within the 2010s, I have not seen five.
My list isn't really so much a top five, so much as the only five.
Yeah.
There might be I think Daddy's Home with Mark Wahlberg.
Count, yeah.
I think that kind of counts as a Christmas movie. So I guess we'll throw that in my honorable mentions. But, like, yeah, very thin and slim pickings. And to answer your question, Aaron, I think more than any other holiday, people want to go back to the well. They want to go back to their favorites, their classics. They're going to watch It's a Wonderful Life for the 30th time. I'm going to go back and watch Die Hard for the 20th time. People love Home Alone and A Christmas Story and The Santa Claus. Those movies are all 20, 30, 40 years old at this point. It takes a long time, I think, for Christmas movies to enter that sort of collection that we consider classic. And movies in the last 10 years aren't there yet.
Yeah.
And I think of the movies that have been coming out in the last 10 years, in that genre, almost all of them are Hallmark movies that are never going to be anybody's favorite. They're mm-hmm. just, let's put them on TV so you have something on in the background while you're putting up lights. Like, it's not, they're not making new family-friendly classics. They're just making room for commercials.
Yeah.
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 Elf was the last one that people would go.
Yeah, I was going to say, honestly,
the most recent one that's kind of gotten into that classic mindset, I think, is Elf. I think that's one a lot of people do watch on repeat. And
that's 17 years old now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The only one after that I thought of that almost made it into the 2010s was the Jim Carrey CG Ebenezer Scrooge.
That movie was that within the last 10 years?
That was 2009, I think, when I was looking at it. I know a lot of people really like that one and do rewatch that one.
That movie's messed up. it's crazy. I'm not kidding. That movie is dark and messed up. It is creepy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there are a couple. Polar Express is kind of that way too, where a lot of people love it and watch it and stuff, but it's hard to watch because of the technology.
It was they released it right when they shouldn't have. In terms of like the uncanny valley, like you were at the bottom of that valley, like don't try. You do not have it figured out yet. You do not have the technology to make this work. And at the time when I saw it as like a teen, I was like, oh, this looks kind of fun. Looking back, the early CG stuff doesn't hold up well. It really doesn't.
So let's get into it. Andrew, we will just leave you out of it for the first couple of rounds then. So we'll wait till we get to number three for you. So let's kind of work our way into it. Also, if you are watching live, feel free to let us know if we've missed any. Throw them in the chat. We'll talk about them after we've gone through our top five, any ones that you want to talk about. One that's already been mentioned twice in the chat is my number five. So I will go ahead and start, and if you have it higher, that's fine as well, as I imagine some people do based on the comments in the chat. But that's Arthur Christmas. Was definitely one that I think deserves mentioning. It's really funny. It's really well done. I think it's 2011. And is a lot of fun. So if you haven't seen that one, that's one I can see kind of getting on people's list because it is a lot of fun. So that's my number five.
I'm going to add it to my watch list because I've never heard of it. And the fact that I haven't heard it of immediately means I should check it out. my number five is a very recent film with Anna Kendrick and Bill Hader, Noel.
Yeah, I had that in my honorable mentions. Yeah,
I feel bad about trumping because I only have three, but...
All right, let's kick it up.
We'll wait, Andrew. It's all right.
Yeah.
It's okay. We can wait.
I watched it yesterday because my sister's like, hey, I would have had two on my list. But my sister's like, hey, you said come over, help us put up Christmas lights and watch Noel with us. So
I think what we're really learning is I really should just make sure I research before I announce a category. That is really the life lesson for Aaron.
This
here
is
today.
Still a valuable discussion. Sure, of course.
I don't want it to come across like I didn't really do my homework or didn't try to watch enough movies. Like I looked really hard from like there has to be a movie. Even so, somebody could like mockingly say, oh, it's a Christmas movie, you know, but. No, you know, nothing.
You know which one blew my mind that has not been in the Christmas movie discussion that could be based on, I mean, if you're going the Die Hard route where it, you know, takes place during Christmas and there's Christmas decorations, Princess Bride is a Christmas movie. That whole thing starts with a Christmas gift and there are Christmas decorations all over their house. And, you know, when you look outside, there's snow and lights on the houses. And
all right, so I have a new number one.
Yeah, well, Princess Bride didn't come out in the 2010s. So.
Oh, crap, yeah.
But anyways, I always find that conversation amusing. It always cracks me up when people are like, you know, you cannot count this as a Christmas movie, or you have to count this as a Christmas movie. All right, I guess we're on to my number four then, right? Is that right? My number four is a stretch, both because it's a stretch as a Christmas movie and also a stretch as a great movie. But I do enjoy it. There's enough about it I enjoy, and that is Iron Man 3.
Okay, I'll allow it.
So look at the look on Andrew's face.
I can't in good conscience defend Die Hard as an all-time Christmas classic and not allow the addition of other films.
Listen, Shane Black loves Christmas. He like, you know, is very much a part of that movie. So
Aaron knows how much I hate this movie.
Yes, Andrew does not enjoy this movie at all.
I hate Iron Man.
I watched it opening night. I don't think I've seen it since, and I'm a huge, huge Avengers guy. I remember it being pretty all right.
There's a lot about it I didn't like the first time I watched it. I think I have fallen so deeply in love with that character that it's still just a lot of fun to watch.
Robert Downey Jr. makes it work. I think with anyone else, it's sort of
kind
of a mess. It's kind of all over the place.
I will say Ben Kingsley as the Mandalorian is whole, or as the the Mandalorian. No. I think he's the funniest part of the whole movie and is what makes it tolerable, I guess you could say.
Yeah. So as a sign of how sparse this category is, allow me to present Iron Man 3 as my my number 4. Yeah. So I think that's your number 4 then, Jonathan.
I will go with Olaf's Frozen Adventure, which is a 30-minute Pixar short in the Frozen universe, where Olaf doesn't have a holiday celebration of his own, so he walks around Arendelle and asks everyone what their Christmas tradition is. Some people use menorahs, some people use Christmas trees, some people bake fruitcakes. And he tries to come up with all this stuff so that he can present to Anna and Elsa their first Christmas tradition, because now they're the sort of head of the kingdom. And it's like 28 minutes long. It's super cute. The music's fun. Animation's brilliant. And my daughter loves it. She's 3. So we've already watched it a few times last Christmas. Probably watch it again soon. And again, with a category this thin, I'm like, this counts. Absolutely.
Sure,
this
go for it. Was this the one that people got upset because it was attached to the beginning of a Pixar movie, maybe, or a Disney movie?
No, that would have been Frozen Fever, which is only like a 5-minute. This is like a full half hour. This is like a
I knew there was one that was too long. The people thought it was too long to have been a short before the movie, and that it had something to do with Frozen.
Maybe this was. I don't know. I didn't think so.
But I have not seen this. But I do love the Frozen universe, so maybe I should check it out.
It's cute. I think this is a lot of people, at least guys our age, sort of mockingly deride Olaf for being kind of an annoying side character that doesn't add anything to the plot. In this movie, he's legitimately funny, and I laugh pretty regularly at Josh Gad's performance. Hmm. So for whatever that's worth, Olaf is redeemable here.
See, I got a little Frozen snowball back there.
There you go.
I love Frozen. That's one for the visual audience. Apologize, podcast listeners. I was pointing at my frozen balls, my frozen snowball. Excuse me. All right, let's move on to Andrew Ormsby, who gets to chime in now with his number 3, which we have already heard, right? Your number 3?
Yeah, Noel.
All right.
I did not like it.
Again, no, I had it 5 out of 5. Like it was
It's not awful. It's cute.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe I don't like Christmas movies. That sounds bad, but like there has to be something really
Grinch,
special.
Boo.
Yeah, really. I don't even like the Grinch, you know? No, but it has to be something special and really have to deal with things other than Christmas. Like if Christmas is the main element of the movie, like if you look at Elf, you know, yes, it's a Christmas movie, but it's also a movie about a father-son relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, there's something I can actually like sink my teeth into and like care about. But
yeah, that's valid.
But this is just like, oh no, Bill Hader doesn't want to be Santa, and he's Santa, so Anna Kendrick, you better do something. And
I hear you.
I think for me, Bill and Anna are both just so fun and cute and adorable.
Yep.
I love both of them in anything. I'll pretty much watch Anna Kendrick in anything she does. Same with Bill Hader. And I don't want to say this is like a fantastic movie that's super entertaining, but it's on Netflix. It's free to watch. Check it out. It's pretty okay.
Yeah, it's good.
No worse than Holiday.
No.
It's a great point.
Right on par with that. I think I'd give both of them like a 5 or 6 out of 10. Like they're just okay.
I'd rather watch Holiday than Noel.
Yeah.
But, all right, so that was my number 3.
So I guess I'm next with my number 3, and I'm going with a comedy. The Night Before is in
Trump!
My number 3. Oh, okay, we're getting trumped by Andrew. All right, fair enough. What's your
number? Sorry, only 3 on my list.
What's your number 3? Jonathan?
I have the animated Grinch from 2018.
That was in my honorable mentions. It's not bad.
And I think this movie sort of made good on all of the failed promise of the Jim Carrey live action from 2000, which for all of its quirkiness, Ron Howard, I don't think could save. It exists for me in a weird space where it looks too weird to appreciate.
Well, and the character is so weird in that movie. And just there's some weird sexual tension in that movie that
it's bizarre. It really is.
It is really
bizarre. This animated version, I think, it nails the tone, it nails the character. And because it's animated, I'm not like hideously like I'm not revolted by what I'm looking at the whole time. All of the Who people in the Ron Howard version are just like, I don't need to see Clint Howard with a nose like this. This is very disturbing to me. Animated version, like it's really cute. It has good music in it. I think the animation's great. So already two of my films are animated. Because if we're talking about Christmas films, I think inherently I want to be able to watch them with my family. And right now that skews very young. So
yeah,
I'm picking another sort of young kids film.
No, I think it makes sense. On to our number twos. What do you got, Andrew?
Krampus.
Really? I haven't seen this.
So. Three, Aaron. And I actually like Krampus. I think it was, maybe it's just my whole down with the patriarchy of holiday cheer and goodness and good tides to your fellow men. And I just wanted to see evil Santa kill people.
Fair enough. The simple things.
I think Krampus is a fun movie. Okay. So
I remember enjoying it. I didn't know that was even this past decade. I thought that was like 2008 or 9. How old is that?
I was like 2013 or 14. Something
I have
like that.
No concept of time.
Yeah. None of it's us gone. Do right now. None of
it's
us
completely
do.
Gone.
Yeah.
I did not see it. I will admit, I did not see Krampus.
Yeah, you did.
Did I?
Yeah. we reviewed it on the show.
It shows really? How much you know.
Yeah, well, you and I went and saw it together.
Well, then that'll tell you how I felt about it.
It clearly left a lasting impact.
No, right. Actually, Aaron actually came out of the movie going, oh, man, that was fun. And Aaron just looked at me and he shook his head.
And that was the last he ever thought about it.
You're not wrong. I have this thing where the negative things that happen in my life, I don't know if it's just part of my personality, the optimism or whatever, I genuinely forget negative things. Like, they genuinely go away, and that includes movies. And
You probably live a much happier life than most people.
I think I do.
Yeah, seriously.
But sometimes it bites
you. A lot
of
people pay good money for therapy that teaches them exactly that. So.
Fair enough.
Yeah, really. I can only focus on the things that depress and frighten me.
I will have conversations with my kids or my wife where they'll be like, you don't remember this argument we had? I was like, no, because we had a resolution, and then I left all that behind me. Like, I just, you know. And my brain just doesn't hold on to it. So sorry, Krampus. I apologize. I forgot that I had experienced you.
Forgotten like a bad fight.
Yes, exactly. All right. My number two then. My number two is The Man Who Invented Christmas.
This is a solid pick. This almost made my list.
I really like this movie. And it is, I think what I like about it is not just Dan Stevens, who I think is great, continues to do really a broad work. You know, he's done a lot of different things.
He was in The Guest, right?
Was he? Yeah, maybe. I first saw him on Downton Abbey.
I know him from Beauty and the Beast.
And then Beauty and the Beast.
I know him from
and
Legion.
Then Legion, yeah. But he continues to show up in wild different places. And he's great here, as is the cast around him. But even more importantly than that, I learned a lot from this movie. I didn't know I had stuff to learn about Christmas. And this movie really kind of goes into how the idea of Christmas holiday and when we celebrate it is actually a fairly recent invention. And I did not realize that. And so, yeah, I found it educational. I found it interesting and I found it entertaining. And, you know, that's a triple threat that works for me. So if you haven't checked it out, I would highly recommend it. The Man Who Invented Christmas. Jonathan, what about your number two?
My number two, this is one, I think, the first on my list I can really recommend and endorse.
Right.
Heretofore, they've been kind of like, whatever, I guess I have to pad out the list. Christmas Chronicles. It was a Netflix movie 2 years ago with Kurt Russell as sort of like a badass Santa Claus. He's sort of a little more like rough and tumble version. I think he rides a motorcycle at one point.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely a scene where he...
Does he have this hateful eight beard?
Almost. I mean, it's Kurt Russell has one of the best heads of hair, I think, in Hollywood. The man looks fantastic. I think he's now in his mid-60s. And as Santa, there's something about the way he looks that's like, yes, I believe this. This is a real man who is Santa and clearly just gets down and dirty with everything he needs to do for that career whatever you want to call it. And it has a mythos to it and a world building that I really appreciated. It reminded me a lot of the Santa Claus with Tim Allen, where it kind of creates this backstory to the character that's rooted in realism and like science in a weird way, where they try to explain how things work. It's like, we don't need you to explain Santa. The whole thing is this great mythos and this legend, but they actually try to put explanations to it in a way that was funny and entertaining. And I thought the movie was legitimately the first of the decade, I think, for me, that will be a classic 15, 20 years from now.
Yeah.
And
they've
already greenlit a sequel, so hopefully we get to hear more about it.
I've heard good things. I have not had a chance to check this one out, so I will definitely get it on my list for this holiday season, because I have heard good things about it, and it's good to hear a recommendation for it. So, yeah, The Christmas Con. You said it's on Netflix?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Okay, Christmas Chronicles. Nice. Time for our number ones, which means that these movies should have all won Oscars. They should be considered amongst the best movies of all time.
Best of the decade.
That's right. These are number one movies right here. And Andrew, you're kicking us off with one I have at number three, I think.
Yep, The Night Before. It's a fun movie. It's not great. I do think that what saves this movie and what really makes it like up there for me is how funny Seth Rogen is in this, as well as Michael what's his name now The Night Before, starring
Anthony Mackie's in this, right?
Yeah, it's Anthony Mackie, Seth Rogen,
Joseph Gordon-Levitt,
yeah.
Michael Shannon as the drug dealer.
Was
so funny. But no, the whole Seth Rogen, when he goes to the church and he's high on, and he's like tripping and stuff like that. Really, really funny stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is top shelf humor right there.
Yeah.
Taking mushrooms and going to church for Christmas mass. You don't get more high class than that.
That is this movie. And I didn't love this movie, but I did actually really like it. It was a fun experience. I was entertained by it. And in a category this thin, yes, it makes our list. So there you go.
That's my Oscar winner.
Nice. My Oscar winner. I actually really love my number one. It is also on Netflix.
Klaus.
And it is Klaus. Yeah, I was blown away by this. I was not expecting this movie to be as good as it was. The voice work in it's great. I think J.K. Simmons is doing something a little bit different than I've heard him do with his performances and with his voice here. And it works really, really well. You've got people like Jason Schwartzman and Joan Cusack, Rashida Jones. Norm MacDonald is really funny in this movie. Not that that's a surprise that I think Norm's funny. I've thought Norm's funny for a long time, but it's kind of fun to hear him, pop up in a voiceover like this. So, and beyond all of that, beyond all of the entertainment and the fun and the funny, it is also a movie that it really understands what it's trying to say, how it's trying to say it, and hits the right spots. So, Klaus is my number one.
Got a question for you. Is there a moment in the movie where people are ringing like jingle bells and J.K. Simmons goes, "Not my tempo"?
Yes.
If only.
Yes, there is. Yeah. Of course there is.
Good.
Same pick sold. For me, Aaron,
nice.
Actually.
Nice.
Klaus is also my number one. I'm just learning this. The first animated film from Netflix to even be nominated for an Academy Award. So to answer your earlier question, yes, this kind of counts. This got
there
some
go.
Critical recognition.
There you go.
The animation is gorgeous. It's done in a really sort of like faux 3D style that I really enjoyed. It has a look like a cel-shaded.
Yeah, there's a cel-shading thing going on there, yeah.
If you remember The Legend of Zelda Wind Waker, it looks a bit like that, which is really cool. The voice work is great. And I think it has, unlike most of the other films on my list at least, a real like message and spirit of Christmas about like giving and giving back. And it also is sort of an origin story to Santa Claus, which is really neat. And fun for all ages. I think it's exactly the type of film that I will be watching with my family for years to come. Whether or not it'll be a classic, I guess that remains to be seen, but definitely the best of the decade, in my opinion, in a very thin category.
Yes.
For whatever that's worth.
Yes. We found a couple worth recommending.
Sure.
You guys aren't alone. Klaus is actually number 184 on IMDb's top 250 movies of all time. So
that surprises me, but it is excellent.
All like movies of all time, or Christmas
movies of all time. 180, number 184.
Wow, that's shocking.
It's the same reason. It's the same reason you get Paddington 2 on that list as well, Aaron.
Yeah,
is because it's so family friendly. People go in with low expectations. Like, I'll just throw this on for my kids. Like, wait, this is actually excellent. I feel like people kind of overcorrect, and it ends up with, you know, like an 8.2 on IMDb, which doesn't sound like one of the best of all times, but when Shawshank only has a 9, like, yeah, 8.2 is
up. No, and the 8s in IMDb is huge. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's sandwiched in between In the Name of the Father and Deer Hunter.
I'll take it.
So
I'll take it. So I like Klaus better than both of those, for whatever that's worth.
Me too.
Brutally depressing movies.
Yeah, right.
And then Klaus.
Does Klaus not have a Russian roulette scene? I don't remember.
Come on. Three more candy canes. Give me three more candy canes.
This is a much different origin story for Santa.
Yeah, right?
He went through Vietnam and's like, you know, maybe I should just give presents out instead.
Yeah. I was looking at the chat throughout. Nobody mentioned anything that we haven't mentioned, although there is a lot of love for Arthur Christmas. People are saying that I ranked it way too low. They can't believe I put Iron Man 3 in The Night Before above Arthur Christmas. So maybe I need to rewatch it. But yeah, there's a lot of love for that one. The only other two that I would mention, just because I've seen them, is Office Christmas Party, which made me laugh a couple times, and Rise of the Guardians. I saw mentioned a few times as well. And
is Office Christmas Party the one with Olivia Munn?
What's that?
Is Office Christmas Party the one with Olivia Munn?
Yes, I believe so.
She's so hot.
Thank you, Andrew.
That's my two cents on the movie that I have
She's
not
also
seen.
Very talented.
Oh yeah, obviously.
Attractiveness is a talent.
Yeah.
Is
but
it?
Also incredibly gorgeous.
Kim Kardashian.
Stunningly beautiful. She's great in Newsroom.
That is true.
Yep, that's right.
That is true.
She's also beautiful.
Guardian, what was it? That was the I think that's a DreamWorks one, Rise of the Guardians. And I think it was they wanted it to be like a franchise, and it just didn't do well enough for them. So
that's the one with like the Easter Bunny, Santa Claus, all of them. Yeah,
right. We're like the holiday mascots got together and, you know, save the world kind of thing. So yeah.
Aaron, you're not the only one who forgets bad things. I had to double check my letterboxed here. I have seen Office Christmas Party.
There you go.
I don't remember, and the reason why is I gave it a 3 out of 10.
There you go.
And I wrote a tepid and lifeless experience. So that's
fair.
I don't remember it, but that's
it's
what
fair.
I said.
Fair. But in this category, it gets an honorable mention.
Yeah, sure.
Just because we have to talk about something.
3 stars for how pretty Olivia Munn is.
I think that, I think that's what he wrote, if I remember correctly, on Letterboxd.
Yep.
By the way, Jonathan has the distinction of being the person to introduce me to Letterboxd. He has been on there for, like, since day one, basically. And
I got in early.
Yeah.
And I've been logging movies privately since 2006. So my diary actually goes back 14, 15 years at this point.
Yeah.
Which predates the site itself, obviously. And
Yeah,
I'm still doing the Excel sheet.
If my memory's not great, so this site helps out a lot.
Yeah, I'm still doing the Excel sheet, and I just it's hard for me to go log for whatever reason, and I need to get better at it. But
I've always found IMDb is where I'm best at logging things.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever method you do, I mean, that you just got to stick with it and keep track.
It's
for
nice.
Me, this was easy, so I started using it, and I kind of fell in love with the convenience of everything.
Oh, I'm with Aaron and you. I love Letterboxd. It's great.
It's nice. It's nice.
I need to convert all of my stuff from IMDb over there.
Yeah.
Did anyone see Last Christmas with Olivia Clarke? That came out last December. I haven't seen it yet.
I don't think so.
I don't think it was out on video until after the holiday. I wasn't in the mood to see it in January. Mm. But that's one movie I thought some of us might have mentioned, but I guess nobody has seen it.
No, I don't. I have not seen it. I never got around to watching it. I know it only as the... referred to by one of my best friends as the Khaleesi DeZizi movie.
I think it was the first movie she did post Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
But I don't know if anyone liked it or what.
So it's like, I haven't seen that Khaleesi DeZizi movie. I was like, okay, fair enough. All right, let's move on to our... recommendations at the end. What do we call that? Buried treasure? Lost the plot there for a second, guys. Khaleesi DeZizi got me.
Andrew, you all right?
I think I'll live.
What is that one thing in any area of pop culture you want to make sure people know about? Andrew, kick us off. What do you got?
Well, you know me, I've been on an anime kick lately, so I'm trying to knock things off my list of anime shame, and the one I'm watching right now is Naruto, and I think Naruto is great. It's a lot of fun. I'm really enjoying this character. A lot of people tell me you have to wait till Naruto Shippuden, I think is what it's called. It's like the second installment of the series for it to get elevated to like the greatest animes of all time. But I'm having a lot of fun just with this original run right now. So yeah, if you're a fan of anime, I think that people are right, and this is one you definitely need to check out if you want to call yourself an anime aficionado.
We send it the first episode on TV Sends, and and as the narrator, I had to learn that it's not Naruto, it's Naruto. And so, because the fans will call you out on that, like, okay, I got to get this down.
You got to roll those R's.
Yeah, you got to figure
That's
it
important.
Out. Very nice. I'm glad you're enjoying it. I was not. I'm not an anime person, so I was not like intrigued after I watched that first episode. But I can see how the world building might be fun.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. It's not like somebody asked me what's the first anime or what's the number one anime I would recommend it. I haven't seen enough of it, but I still wouldn't go, oh, it's the greatest anime of all time. So
nice.
Yeah.
Agreement in the comments. People enjoy it. So
it's good.
I'll go second so that our guests can finish us off. I found a show that was absolutely designed for me on Netflix. There are 6 episodes. It is called We Are the Champions. And I have talked many times about how I will watch anything that is somebody doing something better than anybody else can do it. I don't care what it is.
I but love that too.
Somebody right who has there. Dedicated their life to the stupidest, randomest thing. I love that stuff. And that's basically what this show is. The 6 episodes, I can go ahead and tell you the topics, but the 6 episodes are Cheese Chasing, which is about the people that dedicate...
I've seen the trailer for this.
I'll see if I can do this by memory. I don't have it looked up. I might miss one or two of them. I'm not sure. But Cheese Chasing, Yo-Yoing is another episode. Dog Dancing is another episode. Hairstyling. There's like a hairstyling championship that goes on. That
chili
they do.
Eating and frog jumping.
Yes, frog jumping and chili eating. So, and I just... Like, this sucked me in so hardcore, and I was just like, all right, I give myself to you show for as long as I can, you know, watch, and it was worth it. It's really well done, too. It's well written, well produced. Rainn Wilson narrates it, and I think produces it as well, and so there's a bit of that kind of dry sense of humor going on through some of the narration, but I find it fascinating and beautiful. It's also gorgeously shot. Like watching this cheese chasing in like super slow motion from a drone. Like it's just watching people somersault down this hill and break bones. It's incredible stuff. So yeah, that's called We Are the Champions on Netflix. High recommend.
I like that it's only 6 episodes.
Yeah.
And I think you sold me when you said cheese chasing. Okay.
How long are the episodes?
I think they're around the 30-minute mark, somewhere around there.
Even better. I love it.
Yeah,
man,
yeah.
I've seen clips of those people who like chase the wheel down the hill, and they just face plant hard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love it. So yeah, I'm sold.
There you go. Good. We are the champions.
Right on.
What do you got, all right, Jonathan?
All right, batting third, and for no good reason, because mine is a very light recommendation. I discovered recently the mystery series of movies on the Hallmark Channel, specifically Mystery 101. It is about a professor at a college, ostensibly in America, but they definitely shoot it in British Columbia, who moonlights as a detective. She teaches about criminology, so sure, why not solve a murder in her time off? All of the crimes happen near or about campus, and she just like butts her head into the case and gets involved. These movies are very low rung, very low brain power. It feels like cheap Law and Order, but at a feature length. With someone who, again, is not qualified to solve crime. She is a professor at a college. But there is something so comforting about like an 85-minute, you know they're going to solve the crime at the end of the thing movie, where half the fun is mocking it and calling out as soon as you see the first guy, he did it, and being right, and being right. And my wife and I have turned this into a bit of a game. We've watched two so far just this week. And if you want to get some shopping done or decorate the tree, you need something on in the background. Like, these movies are perfect for that, background entertainment. And I don't even think they're necessarily good, but they're not bad. Like, they're kind of fun. The same way that people love Law & Order, even though it is literally the same thing every episode for, you know, 25 years now. This is kind of that, but in like a cutesy Hallmark way.
Nice.
With a little romantic subplot. And sometimes you need like cheap food. You can't always watch Citizen Kane.
That's right.
Sometimes
that's
you
right.
need Mystery 101.
Sometimes you have to watch Holiday.
That's right.
Sometimes you need CSI Hallmark.
That's right.
So I actually learned the skill that you're talking about with CSI. That was the first show I watched consistently where I learned this skill. And speaking of naming things cutesy things, I used to call it the casual superfluous introduction, CSI. And because that is almost always the killer in those episodes. Somebody who's
you're right. No, absolutely.
Somebody who's introduced casually and unnecessarily in a scene. A speaking line from somebody who wouldn't necessarily need a speaking line is almost always the killer. So, yeah.
My way of going about it is that one guy from that one thing. And he is most likely the one.
That's right, yeah.
Like, you, if you build up enough to get one guy from one thing, he's the killer.
Why?
You know?
Why is the valet car guy, why does he have a line? I don't understand.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Very nice. Mystery 101. Where can people check that out? Is that on Hallmark Channel?
It's on the Hallmark Channel. Okay. We set up a TiVo One Pass for it. And they've made five of them, and they only started a year ago. They make like three of these a year, and I think that's what I love about it. If you need a recurring series, but a feature-length film, so you can still check that box on Letterboxd, these qualify. And nice. I looked into it deeper. Hallmark has like hundreds of these things. Lori Loughlin did like 18 before she was sent to prison.
Wow.
All about garage sale mysteries. And it's like, okay, I guess that's my January now. I'm going to watch every one that Lori Loughlin's ever done.
Nice. Very nice. Well, we did it, guys. We did a podcast. We accomplished the impossible and made it happen. Thank you so much for joining us today. Sif Pop is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to producer Phil for producing the show.
Thanks, Phil.
Thanks to Drew for putting together the graphics. And big thanks to Jonathan Paula for joining us as a guest this week. Where do you want to send
You're very
people?
Welcome.
What you have anything you want to promote? Anything you want to send people to?
I guess the only thing I have done recently of any importance.
Well, other than having a child, but yes.
Yeah, right. I've been working on that. Two quick things. I'm working on what I call the trilogy edit of the Back to the Future films. Taking all three movies, editing them together, splicing in deleted scenes, color correcting, adding music, adding special effects, audio effects, and merging all of the credits for one seamless 5.5-hour experience. I hope to finally have that finished sometime in December.
Nice.
Once I get all like the 4K footage up-resed from the 1080p edit I've been working on. That's sort of been a passion project. Definitely have no idea how I'm going to release that, let alone legally. And the other thing, the pinned tweet on my Twitter page at John Paula is a list I made on Letterboxd of the, I call it the big list of great films according to Humans Everywhere Ranked, or the Blogfather. And this list takes the AFI 100 we mentioned earlier. It takes the IMDb Top 250. It takes British Sight and Sound Magazine. All these respected publications and lists, and weights all of the graphs and all of the totals and merges them all together for one like definitive de facto, these are the top 1,000 movies ever made. And took a lot of Excel math and a lot of free time to put it together. But that has now become my movie Bible that I'm going to slowly whittle away until I see everything on it. And I'm at like 63% or so, 630 movies. So still have a ways to go, but you're going to have every major classic you think you need to watch is going to be on there.
Very nice. So and obviously,
check that out.
The Sif Pop is like 3x. It's like three times weight.
Yes.
For the Sif Pop yes. list on that. Yeah, I just want
to. Anytime you give a recommendation, that immediately is like an automatic yes. 400 points.
Launches up there. Up. Totally, totally get it. Much love and gratitude to our Sif Pop members as well for giving monthly to make Sif Pop a real thing. Support starts at $3 a month, and you get access to every bonus episode, which we do those weekly, as well as some other fun perks. You can find out more at patreon.com/siftpop. Lots of ways to connect with us. You can comment, rate, or leave a review at Apple Podcasts. Or wherever you listen to the podcast. You can also email us at feedback@sifpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like it too, so let them know about it, and that listening is much easier than figuring out the meaning of someone's life from their last words. We will be back next week again, hopefully with another special guest and some more fun movies. We're just kind of playing it by ear, but we'll see you then.
Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.